You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this cold day. ESPN 102.5, the game. If it wasn't for the Titans, it'd be even colder. The temperature drop would be even more significant. They were the only one that's brought the temperature up from local sports this weekend. For the most part, I should throw in maybe the Belmont Bruins basketball. They helped the temperature rise a little bit. The rest of that, freezing cold. Darren McFarland down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is hanging over in East Nashville, and Chase McCabe is back from
his radical. What up, boys?
Whoa, and his level's way hot, so let's turn him down very, very
hot. I was just yelling. Okay. It's probably your ears, because according to my levels, I'm good.
It was a little bit hot. A little bit hot on my end.
Coming in hot?
Coming in hot.
Well, it's a Monday. The Titans won. I'm back from vacation. I'm always hot. I'm just, you know, I'm coming in hot. That's what I'm doing.
Well, we're going to have a 4 hours of probably coming in hot today. We got a lot to get into. Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We'll talk with TD to start the second hour of the program. We're going to do a lot of talking with you here in the first hour. So if you want to react to everything that's happened over the weekend, you can certainly do that with us at 615-737-1025. That is our phone line and text line number, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. At noon, we're going to switch this is what I know at 11:45. Jeremy Pruitt has moved some things around in their schedule. I guess the kids, well, there is that too. He is saying that Jimmy Himes is saying that Jared Garantano did not practice this week with them. And he says he's not sure what's going on, if maybe that is COVID-related, or just like things that happened with Butch Jones, if maybe Jeremy Pruitt's hand may be getting forced on playing Bailey. I don't know. We'll discuss all that. So we're going to have Vince at 1 o'clock, so he will start the final hour of the program. In the third hour, in his spot, we're going to have Chris Lee from AndySports.com. In fact, we're going to talk about what happened over on West End here in just a second, as well as Mike Vrabel at the bottom of the hour. So it was, you know, all this news breaking during our show on Friday, Willie, as we talked about with Sarah Fuller. It was nice that all that stuff was happening during the course of our show, and we were able to touch on it and obviously change even a pick six question to throw in about her. But, you know, they get all this attention. You know, there's College Game Day. We knew it was going to bring a ton of attention, and then they go out there and they do that. And it was just like, oh, man, you talking about all for naught. I mean, that showing was absolutely pathetic. And for all those people out there that thought, yeah, the pandemic will keep all these guys safe. Yeah, well, it's college football, and it's going to take a lot more than a pandemic for all coaches in America to have their job be safe. As we know, that is not the case. And Derek Mason now becomes SEC coach number two to lose his job. And Derek Mason, I guess we would learn yesterday, but I guess it happened Saturday night, at least according to reports. But there is no more Derek Mason. He has been relieved of his duties. And so I'll just start with you, Willie. I thought it was a pathetic performance. There's a lot of layers to this. The uh-oh moment for me is when we found out, or I found out listening to Sarah Fuller, that she talked at halftime. That's when you know you've got huge problems in your locker room, when somebody brand new walks in and they're giving the halftime speech. You've got a team that's either checked out on their coach or they've just checked out on a season because of everything that's going on. But that was the alarms going off in my head whenever Sarah Fuller told us that she was talking at halftime to the guys and that they needed to get up and that the sidelines were complete silence. That, to me, was a bad, bad look for Derek Mason's team.
Well, let me start by saying I did, during the game, just being a guy that cares about Vanderbilt and wants to see them do well. I did have a tough time during the game separating the Sarah Fuller story from what was happening on the field and how poorly they were performing. But as I got removed from it, later that night and the next day, you know, I thought Joe Rexroad did a really nice job and some others. I will single out Joe and Andrew Marinus for giving us the right perspective. The Sarah Fuller story is a great story, separate from what happened in the game. I really was hoping she'd get a chance to kick a couple. That there were so many people watching
that
game.
So was I, because I hit yes on pick six.
Well, all of us.
So did I.
Every single person that participated in our thing did. So,
yeah.
You know, we were all rooting for her, and that was part of the frustration, is they couldn't even get her in a position to think about making a kick. So that should not diminish the big picture accomplishment. I thought she handled it really, really well. So that stands on its own. But if we're talking about the decision made to fire Derek Mason, you know, it was a thing where they were getting a, you know, not just a failing grade, but a way, way failing grade. You know, like there's if a passing grade is a 70, you know, whatever your school had as a passing grade, you know, they were at like a 50. Right, they were way down there. Now, they had improved, I thought, for about three or four games to where maybe they were getting up closer to 60. You know what? Still nowhere close to a passing grade, but a higher level of failing. You know, that it's sort of perspective. They had improved a lot, but they were still woefully behind. And then you have a game like that where you take a couple of steps back, and that's where it really is glaring.
Against Missouri, of all people.
Yeah, and Missouri's not a bad team. They're 4-3.
Yeah, but, you know, 41-0 to Missouri. I mean, if it's Alabama,
well, that's
Clemson,
what I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying, is Missouri is a decent team, but they look like they didn't belong on the same field. It was like a practice. It was like a scrimmage for Missouri, both sides. It was just not competitive at all. And so that is what I think is staring you in the face, is how low it's dipped. And so, you know, I thought they might let him coach on Saturday and then sort of say goodbye and have Tennessee be the swan song. But, you know, they just decided to go ahead and make the move, which I understand. So they're moving forward. I think it was just they had to do it. They really had no choice. They had dipped to a level where it was just simply time to make a change.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it's one of those, you know, and I'll say this, Derek was always great, win or lose, didn't matter. It didn't matter how bad the game was. He kept his commitments. He came on this show. He did it pretty much every week since he became the head coach. And so we developed that relationship with him. But I think everybody, and, it, you know, he probably would admit this too, it comes a time where you got to make a change. To do what's best for everybody, and they hit that point. It doesn't do any good to wait and do it at the end of the season. I mean, you might as well get a jump start on trying to find out who the next guy is going to be and see if you can inspire your team here in the last couple of weeks and try and, you know, get out of the Ofer column. I don't think they're going to do that, especially after what I saw Saturday, and I was surprised by that because
you never know. I mean,
you never know, but
Tennessee, you never know what's going to happen.
And the other thing you don't know is if a team's going to have 15 guys that aren't available all of a sudden. That is something that is Vanderbilt has had, you know, in the 50s in the numbers of scholarship players most of the games. I think from what I'm told, their standard for contact tracing and people not available is higher.
But
than
to
some
your
schools.
Point, Willie, Mississippi and, you know, State had 46 when they went to Georgia 2 weeks ago, and they lost by a touchdown, and they were in it the whole game, and they had 46 kids suit up. I mean, that's the difference. Yeah,
I thought 53 was a threshold where you couldn't play.
That's what Mike Leach said. Mike Leach said 46 peoples is what they took to Athens, Georgia.
There was, I saw that, and there was something that they could say, yeah, we're going to play. No,
the point is that a team all of a sudden like Ohio State could have a team could have your season change just because you have a section of players that can't play. It just changes the look of your team. So who knows what teams are going to field in the coming weeks? But regardless, you know, it's more to me the key is to try and keep something positive so that the younger players who are SEC players, namely, let's start with Ken Seals, you know, and a couple other guys that have shown the ability to be good SEC players, you want to keep those guys in the fold because you, every time something like this happens, you worry that you're going to lose another cross-section of players. They've lost so many already. That's really what was staring them. They love Derek Mason, right? The school loves him. He's a class act. All of us have nothing but great things to say about Derek Mason. And as you look back, it's certainly not the worst performance by a Vanderbilt football coach. You look at the list, relatively speaking, two bowl games, three consecutive wins over Tennessee, a win at Georgia. You know, not all bad. There were some good moments in there, for sure. So, you know, I hope he looks back on his time someday, and he handled it with class yesterday in his statement. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't easy to do this because of how much they like him and how much of a class act, but it was just very simple that, you know, when you look at the writing on the wall and the players leaving and the level that it had slipped to, they really had no choice.
No.
And I think he knew. I think he knew after the game. I listened to his post-game radio interview after the game, and he just, you know, how could you have any answers? There was just absolutely nothing you could say that was in the least bit moving in the right direction. And he was resigned to it, I think.
And as you mentioned, and we've talked about this, it's a weird year for sure, but I do believe that some of the young players, on Ken Seals being at the top of the list, they have something. They just have to develop him right. And whoever the next coach is, you know, if they keep Todd Fitch as the offensive coordinator, which I'd be totally fine with that, if they did that, you know, develop him and keep that going, I think that they could have something there. But the university, as I know we're going to get into, they're also going to have to help the next guy too because it's a tough job.
There may be a relief factor with Derek Mason. I don't know if we'll ever know, but it may have been time in his mind. Look.
Sure.
When you spend 7 years, 7+ years somewhere, and you feel like you've got no help, that is not a good feeling. And I'm not saying that if he had a lot more help, there would be 10-2 seasons in there. That's not what I'm saying. But if you've ever been in a job where the people all above you give you no help and they don't give you a chance to succeed, it's a really, really deflating feeling. Now, the difference for all of us out there listening and for us, you know, we didn't get paid $3+ million a year to deal with that, right? That's the difference. And I could get, you know, I can deal with my pain and suffering a lot more when I'm getting paid about $3.5 million a year, and that's what he got paid. So, look, he got paid well, but, you know, he didn't get any help. He did get paid well. So, I mean, we never thought we'd see Vanderbilt coaches, football coaches, making that kind of money, but that's the landscape today. But when you get no help, that is a really, really helpless feeling. And when you know almost every time you're going into a season or a week, you really don't have a chance for the most part because you're getting no help. You know everybody else around you has tons of help. It's not a good feeling. I just think it weighs on you and it weighs on you and it weighs on you. And it may just have been time in his mind to bounce too, right?
Sure.
I mean, maybe it wasn't just the players. That it looked like I said, when Sarah Fuller's giving the halftime speech, that was a real uh-oh moment for me. Like, wow, they got huge problems.
Because she
room.
Said there was no energy.
There's right. Maybe that's also the coach. That's what I'm getting. Maybe it's also the coach. Maybe it just wasn't the kids. Maybe the coach. And I'm just giving my opinion. I have no idea, and I don't know if we'll ever know. But maybe Derek Mason, it was time in his mind as well. Even as much as he loved the job and wanted to be here, if you know you can't succeed – if you can't get any help or you can't get it to a certain level because you get zero help, and I know that's kind of what you're hinting at, Chase, they're going to have to do moving forward, maybe Derek Mason in his mind was also ready for the change.
Well, and you guys remember, I think it was 2 years ago, it was in Atlanta at SEC Media Days when he did he did pretty much every radio station there, but he came on our air and it was the most, you know, I guess real that at that point that I had really heard him about, hey, this is not an easy job, but I'm the right guy for this job. And these are the things that we need. And he brought up the stadium, and that was kind of when that whole thing was kind of, there was some, I guess, some noise with that of, all right, are they going to build a new stadium? But he went into it and he talked about it. So he was public about it, that it is a very difficult job because of just the other things that surround it other than coaching the football team. On top of that, you have to add that you're dealing with a pandemic and you may, you know, you didn't have a kicker. You had to go get Sarah, and that was awesome. And then, you know, you never know what players you're going to have week in and week out because of the pandemic on top of all the stuff that he has to deal with just as the head coach at Vanderbilt. So I agree with you. I think that when that meeting happened, you know, there could have been all right, I tried.
I tried, right. I gave him my best. I just, right. There's no doubt. I mean, that is real. If you're a true competitor and you know, but look, he's not breaking new ground. Willie knows it. I know it. There's a ton of people out there listening. Huge Vanderbilt fans. You've grown up here your whole life, Chase. You're a Vanderbilt fan. Your dad was a Vanderbilt fan. I'm not telling anybody out there that he's not breaking new ground, okay? Bobby Johnson walked away because of the same frustrations. I mean, just up and walked away, quit on them because of the frustrations. I mean, it's not new stuff. So it's literally going to be either up to the next person to come in and just say, I know the challenges, I'm going to embrace them, I'm going to do everything I can to work around the challenges, or they're going to get help. But there's no way for us to know whether the mentality is going to change. I mean, we all like Candace Story Lee. We know there's a new chancellor. We don't know the new chancellor. We hear good things about the new chancellor. But nobody really knows if the next person is going to get, you know, more help than anybody's ever gotten before, really, other than James Franklin. I think James Franklin was just the bull in the china shop. Maybe they need to get the next person's got to be the bull in the china shop. That's the only way you can shift things over there. I mean, he forced them. He gave them no choice.
Right.
Even when he was getting told no, no was unacceptable for him.
And that
think he was getting told no every time. He forced it. He made it happen. They have a new practice facility.
I don't think everything was yes. Yeah, he was getting pushed back, but he pushed back.
Absolutely. Well,
and that was the difference.
They have an indoor practice facility, a beautiful first class facility, probably because of him and his persistence.
Yeah, they do, but it's athletics. It's not just football. I mean, it's
well. Who do you think gets the priority over there? I understand that everybody gets use out of that, but my point is, it wouldn't be there if it weren't for him and his ability to. You know, his unique ability to push the envelope and get it done. And so the way I look at it is the James Franklin chapter in the history is one that they need to look back on for the good and the bad, and it's mostly good, right, to ask yourself, how did they do what they did when he was there? I think the next coach that's interviewing is going to be looking at those 3 years and saying, what did they do? Remember, they went for 28 years – 26 years, 1982 to 2008, without going to a single bowl game. So since 2008, when Bobby Johnson won the Music City Bowl, they've been to a lot of bowl games. You know, they've had way, way more success, so that you know you can have some success if you do the right things. But what happens, and I've said this many times before, what happened after James Franklin, it seemed like everybody over there was pushed. You know, the ones that, you know, and I'm talking about above the athletic department. Oh, man, football, man, this guy's really pushing. I guess we got to do stuff for the football program. You know, he made it happen. There's kind of a tendency to get off the accelerator and say, whew.
But why?
Wow, we did all these things. Well, that's what I'm saying, Chase. That's what needs to change. Right. Now you have that. There's a take your foot off the accelerator. Well, we took care of football for a while. Wow, I guess we don't have to do that anymore. And that's what Derek Mason, I think, fell into. I think a lot of people said, well, you know, he got the new, there was a new facility. There were better things that he inherited than James Franklin inherited before him and Bobby Johnson before him. There have been advancements, but it still doesn't keep up with the rest of the league. And I think that's the flaw.
The ultimate weapon he didn't have was the 9-win season. That's the ultimate weapon. That is the sword you walk in and you can slam into the ground like James Franklin did and say, nobody else, you know. There's somebody we used to work with, Willie, that said, you know, there's not a lot of these people growing on trees, and I'll just leave it at that. And he could have walked in and said, there's not a lot of former Vanderbilt coaches that have 9 wins in their arsenal. They're not growing on trees, and he can slam that sword into the ground. That's what Derek Mason ultimately could not do in seven-plus seasons, is have that winning season, which James Franklin did. When he got, you know, Derek, it's not like Derek Mason didn't try like James Franklin. He probably didn't have the persistence that James Franklin. I mean, James Franklin, if you ever met him, his personality is different than Derek Mason. It's different than
he's
going
to overtake you. I mean, that's
yes,
he is.
Right. But he also had the ultimate weapon. He had, you know, back, he had nine win seasons. And he
could slam after the nine win seasons. He won six.
But he had back-to-back nine win
seasons.
Right,
but when he was getting the stuff done, it was before and during the time he was building the nine-win seasons. He didn't even stay around to see what could have been as a result of the nine-win seasons. You know what I'm saying? Like, he used that. He had the success, and then he left. He was only there for 3 years.
Right,
yeah, and
he
the
left
next
big
guy.
Why. And why did he leave? That's what we're talking about, and that's why. Right. Because he got tired of, it shouldn't be this hard to get stuff done here. Or do you want to win or do you not want to win? Are you having fun with this or are you not having fun with this? For the first time, he was the one that broke through and, you know, wow, Vanderbilt, even though they're a private institution, we're not supposed to know how much they're paying their coaches. Wow, you're paying your football coach that much?
Well,
was already new ground.
They made a huge commitment to him monetarily. They gave him all the, the raises, and they tried like heck to keep him from leaving for Penn State,
but I think ultimately he left.
That was a unique opportunity for him to jump up.
He knew wasn't going to change here.
Darren, Penn State, that's a job where
Willie,
he felt
don't
like
act
he won a
like
national
he wasn't
championship.
Looking before then. He had been looking and throwing feelers out there all the time for big boy jobs.
How many coaches out of 100 do you think would not leave to take Penn State over Vanderbilt?
I understand that. I'm not saying Penn State or Texas or other jobs that he was trying to put feelers for, that those are not better jobs. I get it. But there's also a reason why he was doing that, because Vanderbilt gave him the reasons to do that. That's the difference.
I'm saying Vanderbilt, you got to be fair. They reacted. They came to his backing. They did a lot for him that they did not do for coaches before him. So they deserve some credit for that. My point is they really haven't stayed with that mentality through the Derek Mason years. It's like they relaxed. They took their foot off the gas and said, whew, man, we don't have to do that anymore. And that's where you see the slippage, I think. They didn't back Derek Mason the way they backed James Franklin.
Because he didn't have the ultimate weapon. He didn't have the nine-win season.
Right, but you're painting a picture that James Franklin left because he wasn't getting a reaction from Vanderbilt. They reacted. They supported him.
No, they didn't always support him. He had to work very hard to get that stuff done. It wasn't easy at all. It was a lot of work away from what he does.
If you think it's going to be easy for the next guy, I got news for you. It's not going to be like
that. But you're painting the picture like James Franklin got everything he wanted, and that's just simply not true.
I didn't say everything he wanted.
That's not true.
He got more than anybody had ever
had
before.
Yes, because he had to work extra hard away from being a football coach behind the scenes to get any of that stuff, and it was a lot of work. And you know what?
No question.
He probably said, you know what? I should be getting paid double. Because I've got two jobs. I've got a job. I got to be a football coach, and I got to do all this stuff behind the scenes.
And he did get paid double. He got a huge raise.
He did get paid double.
But here's the thing. They gave him a raise every year.
He may have gotten triple of what the last football coach was making.
And they tried to match dollar for dollar what Penn State was throwing out there. It was not about money for Penn State. It was about just the ability to win at a higher level at a program that has an unbelievable history that I think nine out of ten coaches would have done.
Here's the thing, though. I want the next guy to come in there with the mentality of, I have to work harder than I would with any other job. That's fine at the beginning. But the people above him also need to go, yeah, we can't take our foot off the gas either. We can't do what happened with James and let some of these old habits creep in. They have to change that mentality, because the bottom line is, I mean no disrespect to any other program on that campus, but football is king, and they don't treat it that way at Vanderbilt. They never have. And they need to make a decision once and for all. Are they going to do that? Because they should. They're in the SEC. They get a lot. They get millions and millions every year because of SEC football. And so now they need to start acting like that they're going to be a big boy program. And being a big boy program doesn't mean 10, 11 wins, 9 wins, whatever, every year if you're Vanderbilt. But at least be competitive. Build the facilities that you can get the kids in there that, you know, want to come and go, oh, hey, this locker room's pretty awesome. Okay,
right. Quiet
sure,
down
I'll play
your alumni that scream on national platforms about how far behind you are, right? Like, quiet those people down, like Jordan Rodgers and others that played there and understand it.
And
like,
we've talked to him.
At least do that.
Of course. Now, you have a new chancellor that has come in, and he has said all the right things. So this is the test. So here he is. You got a new athletic director, and last time Candace was on with us, she said, you know, I can't tell you everything yet, but she's made it sound like they've been working on behind the scenes, the plan for whatever the next chapter is with their facilities. We're all anxiously awaiting. It's overdue. This is a pandemic, so you got to give them some slack. But now this is the opportunity for the chancellor, for the new athletic director to sort of say this is a new thing. We're going to get the right person in here, and we're going to give that person every opportunity to succeed. So this is a wait and see.
And I hope there it's more than words. I really do. I mean, like Darren said,
well, this
I
guy
grew
has
up here.
No history. So we don't know we have no idea really what it is that he has his vision for, because he hasn't been here. I can say he has said it. So we don't know one way or the other.
But the problem is, and you know this probably better than anybody, a lot of people come in and they'll say things because they think that they can make it true, and then somebody above them says, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. So I hope him being the chancellor and saying these things, I hope that it's true, and I hope that there are actions that support those words. But I that stadium that I have gone to since I was 3 years old hadn't changed a whole lot. So they got to make these changes. They got to build the right facilities, and it's even beyond the stadium. I mean, Darren, you remember we had a conversation with Jordan at SEC Media Days, and he said it's the stadium's one thing, but it's the facilities that the guys are at every
day. It's all the stuff the people, the public doesn't see.
Right. You got to take care of that stuff because that's how you're going to get the recruits.
Yep.
So, I mean, and I know that we're all on the same page of that we want to see changes and we want to see the next guy have more tools than maybe Derek Mason had, but it's you can say it, you can win the press conference, now you got to do it.
We'll talk to Chris Lee at noon. We'll hear from Mike Vrabel at 12:30. We'll come back and we will talk about the Titans' impressive win in Indianapolis. 45-26 over the Colts, back on top in the AFC South. Derrick Henry goes for 178 yards and 3 touchdowns, basically all in the first half. That was his first half work, which was amazing. So we'll get into all that and more. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hand off. Henry weaves through. Henry is in again. Touchdown. King Henry has 3. Crown him.
/5:26. It was already 35-14 at the half. Colts have been digging themselves some huge holes after 60 minutes of play, or 30 minutes of play. They were able to overcome it the week prior against the Packers when they were down 2 touchdowns. Not 2 scores, but 2 touchdowns at the half. They came back and won in overtime. Too much to overcome. And I'll just start there. I thought the decision to go for it on 4th and 4 and to get that completion to Corey Davis and then have that touch. I think that ended up being the Tannehill touchdown, right, to finish things off. I thought that finished off the Colts. I thought that play right there, that decision and that conversion and then eventual touchdown, I thought that was it. To me, in my mind, yeah, I know anything's possible. We just saw the Colts come back the week prior against the Packers. I felt like this game was over. I felt like that was the death knell to me. I don't know how you guys felt, but to me, that sequence was it. I thought that was the nail in the coffin for the Colts.
That was extremely gutsy, I think, to do what they did there. Showed a lot of confidence in the defense, because if they don't get it there, you're still giving the Colts somewhat of an opportunity to go down and get a little momentum before the end of the half, knowing that the Colts get the ball to start the second half. So a little bit of a gamble, but man, did it ever pay off? Because you're right. That I thought that that sealed the game, no question.
I'm glad you said gutsy. I'm glad because I said that
That wasn't a no-brainer, right, to do that.
No, well, and I tweeted that out. I said gutsy call by Vrabel, but it worked. And people came back at me and go, no, the numbers tell you that you have to go for it there every time, and it was the right move. It was an easy call. I don't think it was an easy call.
What numbers are they going off of? What chart do they have?
Right. Like,
is that a Twitter chart?
Probably. I mean, these are, you know, Twitter OCs, Twitter head coaches.
Well, you have analytics sites on Twitter that have, like, up to the second, you know, here's your win probability for doing this. Your win probability by going for it increases by 0.5% here. I mean, there are sites where a lot of people can – you know, throw something at there. But I'm just saying, you know, when you're Mike Vrabel, you got to weigh all that in the moment. You could have tried a super long field goal. You could have punted it. And you could have gone for it. As they were doing it, I wasn't like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they're doing this. It was just, it was a choice. It wasn't an easy choice. And the choice ended up being a tremendous choice. Because it provided sort of the knockout blow.
And then the play call by Arthur Smith on the goal line, because everybody's expecting, all right, here comes number four. He's going to get it in. I'm watching Twitter. Fourth touchdown. Here we go. And he does the fake to Tannehill, and Tannehill walks right in. I mean, that was a great play call because I felt like right there it was going to be the death knell no matter what. But scoring right there, just, you know, everybody expecting Henry, and then you do that. That really just took the air out of the building and put it in the Titans' favor. So I agree with you, Darren. I think we all agree that was it. That was the nail in the coffin, whatever analogy you want to use. But it was good to see the offense really show their dominance yesterday, because I feel like that there have been the last few weeks, you know, the first drive's always scripted, that the first drive looks good. You go, okay, here we go. And then they fall off. And, you know, when they're deeper in the game, they couldn't quite get things going. It took them a little longer against Baltimore. Obviously, they won that game. But yesterday, just right from the get-go, the offense was dominant. And obviously, Henry had everything to do with that. But you even had A.J. Brown, you know, making big plays, that long catch for a touchdown. There were others that were stepping up, too. So that, I think, feeds into the bend don't break for the defense when the offense is as dominant as they were yesterday.
Yeah, and you don't have any turnovers. And the third down efficiency. I mean, you could tell, by the way, not that it matters, because the Titans have dealt with it. Everybody in the league's dealing with it. But it just seemed like, and that is how you start different. You know, when we do these top tens every week, you have to try to figure out who's adapting to it better than others. I mean, it seemed like Indianapolis was unable to overcome some of their losses. Couple guys on the offensive line, and what is Costanzo went down, and think about DeForest Buckner, what that meant over on the defensive side of the ball, you know, and then they already had Kelly out. I mean, you could just tell it affected the Colts a lot more than it affected the Titans. I mean, let's just say this: third left tackle of the year for the Titans. He's a great story, and when you're not talking about him other than he played well and there's nothing really to see here, that means he did his job well. David Quisenberry, what else can you say about him? I thought he filled in. It's a week. It's great. It's a week. And that's fantastic. But, you know, to have him look like that as their third left tackle on the season, pretty impressive. Like I said, I think they did a better job. Look at Breon Borders, who we've talked about this year, but I thought he had his best game, obviously. Was that the fourth time he started this season? Borders had, other than the pick six that should have been a pick six, that I know he'd love to have back and probably would do that 9 out of 10 times, but that would be the one time that he was unable to finish things off. But, you know, it seems like they're getting nice production out of some of these no-name guys, and Willie and I played this game on Friday. Like, name that Titan. I mean, we're just, you know, what guy are we going to see this week that is like, who the hell is that? You know, that's the game we've all been playing this year, and, you know, of course it was there on display again Sunday, like it's been most all season.
Remember,
we were talking about how every week there seems to be a guy that has not appeared on the radar that is in the lineup, and not just like in for a play, but you know, playing a significant role that you've almost never heard of before. And the Titans, I think, they've always excelled at this. This has always been, I think, a strength of John Robinson and Mike Vrabel since they've gotten here, is they seem to find guys that aren't the greatest players, but they can plug a hole for you. And I think they clearly had – they got more mileage out of those guys yesterday and have over the course of the season than the Colts did at least yesterday. The Colts were hit with a lot, right? Let's be honest. The Colts already had five starters out because of the COVID issues. And as you said, Darren, the Titans took full advantage. And then they lost their most important offensive lineman, their left tackle, Costanzo, and there was a massive drop-off after he went out, right? The first two drives, it looked just like the first game. They were moving the ball. They went down and scored two touchdowns, and you thought, oh, boy, it's going to be another long day for the defense. And then once he went out, they started getting a very good pass rush. They completely changed the look. They were forcing Phillip Rivers into his weaknesses. He had to get rid of it quick. He was throwing off his back foot. He didn't have the time. And that's to their credit, right? But that's, you know, taking these pieces. They lost Jayhon Brown. They don't have any defensive ends or outside linebacker edge rushers to speak of other than Landry, and they still found a way to make it work. So the Titans certainly aren't going to feel sorry that the Colts didn't have their full lineup. That's life in the NFL right now. And the Titans were able to win surprisingly easy.
But I want to go back to something we talked about way back when of, okay, do you, you know, with, I guess it was the Beasley conversation before they released Beasley, and we discuss having those guys that are, you know, making league minimum or whatever that are just, you know, they're just hungry. They just want to play. They just want to be a part of it. And if you have the $9 million guy that's not doing anything, yeah, you're going to walk away from that. You're going to have to pay that no matter what. But then you have these guys. Borders fits that mold. I mean, he's just that. That's the kind of guy you want.
He's playing every
team.
Play.
It's contagious. That's what I'm saying. That kind of play is contagious, because I'm not saying he is the savior of the secondary, but the secondary has been better. And it's because he's making plays. You have King that – and I heard Robbie say it this morning. King's aggressive. That's a good way to put it. Maybe a little too aggressive at times, but that helps. And then if you get Adoree Jackson back at some point, you get Christian Fulton in there, I mean, that it's only going to continue to get better. But having a player like Borders that just has that, I'm glad to be here, I'm going to fight every down, that stuff's contagious. And I think that's good for a locker room.
Darren, I have a nominee for the award that we were giving. I guess we called it the Brewer Award because neither of us had heard of Brewer, and all of a sudden he was in there and played most of the game against the Ravens.
Well, I've got mine because I even said his name on Friday night.
Yeah.
I couldn't even remember how to say it.
I think we're thinking of the same guy, but Tyre Tart would be my nominee. No?
I did bring him
you
up.
You brought him up on Friday. I found myself
noticing Tyre
Tart. So
you guys founded
Tyre
the Brewer Award? Is that what you did Friday?
Yeah, because I think Borders had won it early. We were naming the guys that have won it at one point or another this year that have just kind of popped up out of thin air and played a lot. Borders certainly is in the club. Brewer's in the club. I'm adding Tyre Tart. Who you have there?
Well, the guy I brought up Friday, I was like, I don't even know how to say his last name. Nick Dezubnar? Dezubnar?
Yeah, Dezubnar.
Dezubnar.
Yeah, the special teams guy.
By the way, he was out there on Sunday. You know, I mean, it's just like, who these guys? And they're not just for a play. No, I actually mentioned Tart, but yeah, no, I mean, it's every week. It's impressive.
They had Will Compton. Will Compton was wearing the headset on defense.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you know, Will Compton and David Long are guys that have sort of been in the fray in the past, so I'm not sure they completely fit, but those are two other guys that are now going to have a very important role from here forward. Just out of necessity. And I think to win a championship, especially when you have the COVID factor and at any time you could lose some other guys, that's part of the equation, is being able to plug guys like that in.
Chris Milton's been that guy. I mean, mainly on special teams, but you know, he's made plays.
Here's a guy I brought up on Friday, and he had how many catches? Let me look. He had three catches. Jeff Swaim. I brought him up
former,
on Friday. I was
former
like,
Cowboy.
Who is this? I was like, there's a guy. He's like, I brought his name up, and sure enough, he had three catches.
Right. So he's Michael Pruitt's replacement, and he gave him a nice look. Now, he had a couple penalties, but he did. He had a big role in the game yesterday.
He was one of the guys that tried to replace Jason Witten when Jason Witten retired the first time and was off the Cowboys before he came back. He was on that team. I guess he's just been around, and the Titans picked him up this year.
Other guys that have won the award before that come to mind, Foreman, for sure.
Yep.
McNichols, early in the season, we didn't know where he was, and all of a sudden he pops in there on opening night, so he's been in there every week, so he's one of the first winners of it. So there's just a long line of guys that they have come up with here, and who knows who it is going to be next week, but the Colts are in that spot now, right?
Oh, there's a lot of teams
have to find some guys.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's why the top 10 every week is fun, because you got to see who's adapting to it and who's not doing so well adapting to it, right? Because some teams are better at it than others. Not everybody can adapt to it well. We'll see how the Ravens tomorrow night look.
The Ravens are going to have a roster full of those guys tomorrow night just to field a team.
Yep, that's exactly right. But we also felt that way about the Titans going into the Bills game, and look
right.
What they did.
I'm just curious to see if they can put up a fight. Look at what the Broncos had to do yesterday. It felt bad. They had no shot.
No, well that was
no
that's
shot.
A different. That's a. Di- I mean, first
and they
of all,
sort of did it to themselves.
I was gonna say that's on them. That's kind of a you problem. Like that's
they
you
didn't
caused
think,
that.
They didn't think they could get burned in
well,
that way, and they did.
That's on them. Yeah, and so you had a guy out there throw for 13. Yes, let me say that again. 13 yards.
They didn't have a quarterback.
For 13 yards yesterday in an NFL game. That was their passing yards. 13. And they got smoked.
Unreal.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk with TD to start the second hour. But first, a word from Chase.
Yes. It's good to be back. Had a good vacation. And it's good to be able to tell you about BetMGM Sports. Because you know that I've enjoyed some success with BetMGM. You can too. There's never been a better time to find out why BetMGM Sports, they are the king of sportsbooks. Right now, new customers have a chance to win $100 in free bets when they place a $1 moneyline wager on the Seahawks or the Eagles. And if either team scores a touchdown, you are a winner. It is simply that easy. All you have to do is use the bonus code 1025GAME100. 1025GAME100. When you make your first bet, that's how you take advantage of this offer. If you're ready to be like me, start betting with confidence, feeling good, do your happy dance, turn big plays into paydays, then you need to sign up today. Discover BetMGM's innovative parlay selection tools, boosted odds specials, daily promotions, and much more. Download the app today or go to BetMGM.com. Use that bonus code 1025GAME100 to win $100 in free bets when you wager $1 on the Seahawks or the Eagles to score a touchdown. It's always showtime at BetMGM Sports. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years or older, must be present in Tennessee. For gambling problem support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Mike, how much was it about execution? Maybe how much was it about attitude, or maybe it was a combination of the two?
Well, man, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Playing complementary football, playing better, coaching better. When you can run the ball for what we did and hold them to what we did, that's the difference in the football game. You know, so that's how you define physicality, is being able to cover kicks and also the way that you run a football and stop the run.
Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday morning, brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey, smoother than smooth, kind of like the Titans yesterday in their 45-26 victory over the Colts. This is the last day of the month of November. Sad. Can you believe we're going into December tomorrow? November is Hockey Fights Cancer Month. It's not too late for you to help out the Predators Foundation. They still need your help towards the Smashville Donates campaign. Visit NashvillePredators.com/365Fund to make a donation to the 365 Pediatric Cancer Fund presented by Twice Daily. Purchase Hockey Fights Cancer gear and learn more. You can also bid on the silent auction items, which are always great, by texting the word PREDS to 76278. Text the word PREDS to 76278. You can also follow them on Twitter at Preds Foundation, and on Instagram for more information. We've got some developing news right now. And by the way, Willie, what you're about to announce is happening here in Smyrna as well. We'll see if Chase can follow up. But go on and put it out there. What do you see over in East Nashville?
We got a few snow flurries here.
So we got here. That's going on in Smyrna right now.
We have that on the west side. When I was outside about 20 minutes ago, I guess it was spitting.
Now, don't freak out. We're not saying it's not sticking. It's spitting snow. There's real snow flurries. I mean, you can see it here in Rutherford County. Willie's saying East Nashville, so all over, I guess, Middle Tennessee. But don't freak out on the roads. Right now, it doesn't look like anything's sticking. It'll probably be viewed as a dusting. But nonetheless, we have snow in November. I cannot think of the last time in the, 22, 23 years I've been here living now that we've had snow in November. I can't think of any. Willie, can you? Chase?
Oh, I'm sure.
You grew up
here.
Oh, we've, yeah.
Flurries. I mean, now sticking to the ground.
In November?
Absolutely.
I can remember when I was young, I was little. We had snow on Thanksgiving.
A decade ago?
Yeah, about a decade ago.
Well, a flurry is nothing. I mean, just
no, but we had
sure
snow.
There's been
flurries
here and there, but
we had like a dusting.
Snow, maybe.
We had like a dusting or something on Thanksgiving when I was little.
Really?
I do remember that.
Okay,
yeah.
When you were little. So that would have been, it depends
about 10 years ago.
Yeah. So I was here. I don't remember that.
No, it was. I was probably 6.
It's dare I say it's coming down pretty decent here, which I'll be the first to admit, because I had this conversation with several people over the weekend when it was brought up, because everybody freaks out when they start saying the S word on the local TV stations, and I was like, I was the first to be like, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. Snow in November, come on. Well, I believe it because I see it. All right, what did you guys make of Derrick Henry's performance yesterday?
Well, it's a fantastic performance, as we know. And this is turning into another completely dominating season. And we are just now entering into the time of the year where he usually shines the most. So it's going to be really interesting down the stretch if he does anything close to what he's done the last 2 years in terms of, peaking. But the one thing that I've been on, you got to give me credit. This is not, I'm not bringing this up today. I've been bringing this up for weeks now. I thought it was intriguing that they had the lead, right? When they hit the knockout punch that we just talked about and go up 35-14, and then you go into the second half, the Colts have come back. They get some stops early, but they go into the fourth quarter still with a commanding lead, 38-20. And they have a drive late in the game in that fourth quarter where they gave him the ball 6 times to try to run the clock out. So he ends up with 27 carries. And I think you could argue that, you can argue both ways. It's not clear cut, but I think you can argue that they could have shut him down and still won the game pretty handily unless something pretty crazy happened. So he ends up with 27 carries. That's 55 carries in the last 2 weeks. He's leading the NFL, obviously, in rushing yards. He's way ahead there.
Do you know that – listen to this real quick pause. Do you realize Derrick Henry has more rushing yards right now than more than half of the NFL's teams combined? Like their rushing yards for the season? He's got more rushing yards than more than half of the teams in the league.
So what that defines is not only he's really good, he's the best – I think he's better than Dalvin Cook. He's the biggest weapon going. But he is also an anomaly. He's different. He's a throwback, right? Because most teams don't give it to a guy anywhere close to the amount of times that the Titans are giving it to him. So he has 256 carries through 11 games. That's most in the league. 23.3 carries per game, which puts him on base for 372 carries. Now, we talked to Aaron Schatz last week. About the curse of 3-7.
It's not Gatlinburg.
Right?
Yeah.
Track record of backs, and this is not some magical, spell that's put on somebody, because you hear people scoff, and I had somebody on Twitter already do it this morning, so I know it's out there. It's just a number, man. Don't worry about the number. But it's just a fact that
just numbers on a screen.
If you if you give the back 370 carries, the next year there is a drop-off almost every time. And so, as I was tweeting that this morning, I was putting the numbers together. Our friend Joel Corey, Nashville Ties, went to high school at University School of Nashville, became an agent, now an analyst for CBS. He's been on our show many times. He put out there the Titans could run him into the ground for the next 2 years and then walk away monetarily. So to me, that's the question here. That's the dilemma. Because we've said before, he's the best weapon going who's not a quarterback in the NFL. So you want to give him the ball as many times as you need to give it to him. But there is a price to pay down the road. So I know they're aware of it. I just was a little intrigued that they gave it to him so many times in the fourth quarter when, in my opinion, that would have been an opportunity to dial it back and save those punches for another day.
I was a little surprised by that too, but here's what I'll say. You got to live in the now. You have to. And Derek, I believe wholeheartedly that Derek feels that way too. He knows what it's doing to his body. He lives it every day. But he's going to look at it as, yeah, I want a championship. And I'm in my prime. I'm still doing this. I got three straight games over 100 yards now. I'm leading the league in rushing. Could possibly win back-to-back rushing titles, which hasn't been done.
I was going to say, when's the last time that was done?
2006, 2007. Take a guess.
Tomlinson?
Correct.
Was it?
Okay. He's the last one to do it. That's in 2006 and 2007.
I was thinking of him or Curtis Martin, somebody like that. Yeah. Wow. 06, 07. Okay.
Curtis Martin only won it once.
Okay.
Because Sean Alexander won it the next year.
That's right. 07. Well,
Sean Alexander. Who does Teron bring up every time? Sean Alexander did it in a year where he had over 370 carries and then was never the same after that. So that's the question to me.
Let's do this real quick because we got to get to Teron.
Yeah.
Let's also say this, disclaimer, okay? The game is different, really. And I'm not saying it's time to discard that stat because I still think it's very relevant. But running backs, and yes, you're still hitting, but come on. You cannot punish players like you were able to do in the past. You just cannot. And so you cannot do the things that some of these other running backs that we're talking about that teams did to them in today's game. You just can't. And I get it.
You think it's that different for a running back? I know for wide receiver, I agree with you 100%.
Because anything lowering the head, anything is going to be called a penalty. You just can't hit players like you did in the past. I'm not saying that, like I said, I'm not saying disregard the stat. I'm saying the game is a little bit different. And the players do not take the punishment on their body like they did in the past because players are not able to do. And I don't think that's such a horrible thing because I think there was a lot of dirty things going on mm-hmm. back in the day. I think there is no doubt the whole bounty game, that stuff went on all over the league trying to take players out of games. I said it back then when it happened, and I still say it today. I was at that game. I was sitting in the press box. I watched it. I had binoculars in front of me, and I watched the Ravens every play in that playoff game twisting and turning Chris Johnson's leg because they knew he had a bad ankle. And when he left early in the second quarter, never to return, I said it on the airwaves. Willie, you know it. That Monday, the Ravens were trying to knock Chris Johnson out of the game. They did it, and that was their game plan, and they won. You just can't do that stuff. Like, I'm not saying that that stuff still does it. The dirty stuff still doesn't go on.
Oh, it
just
still
doesn't.
Exists.
It just doesn't go on to the levels that I think it used to. That's
sure.
just my opinion. So I don't think it holds as much weight. How about that? It still holds a lot of weight. It doesn't hold as much weight because I just don't think players, the collisions are not the same as they were for the last, decades. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk with TD to start the second hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Britsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm heading it over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.